You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Welcome to a special podcast recorded from the workshop on fundamental problems in quantum physics in Arice, Italy, supported by CAST. I'm Zia Morali. In this edition, we're discussing a long-standing and popular proposal for dealing with the seemingly weird fact that the world looks very different on small scales compared with what we see around us every day. The meeting in Arice celebrates the work of Giancarlo Girardi, who, with colleagues, proposed the GRW collapse model. Later in this edition, you'll hear from Girardi himself. But first, I caught up with FQXI member Angelo Bassi of the University of Trieste during a noisy coffee break at the meeting. Bassi has also worked extensively on collapse models, and he explains their motivation, how they work, and experiments that might test them. He is also one of the organisers of this COST meeting, and began by telling me about the thinking behind the conference.
So this is the fourth and last meeting within the framework of a COST action, which has the same name as the meeting, Fundamental Problems in Quantum Physics. So this is funded by the COST Association, and we submitted the project 4 years ago. We were lucky to be funded, and the main mission of this type of actions is to promote the meetings and any kind of event that can bring scientists together, especially from these different disciplines, to bring young researchers in contact with senior researchers, people from less advanced countries, of course within Europe still, to more advanced in some sense countries. And that's what we did for the last 4 years. Got more and more experimentalists on board, and that's perhaps the best outcome of it.
So, let's start talking about the physics. And I want to talk to you in particular about something called collapse models. And I should say this is because we've had a request from, one of our listeners or visitors to our site who wants to know more about them. And handily, that was the topic of a lot of discussion yesterday. So what is this kind of fundamental or one of the fundamental problems with quantum physics that has led people to think about collapse models? What's all of this about?
So historically this is the first and perhaps still most important debated problems in quantum foundations, which is known technically as the measurement problem, which goes back to the times of Einstein and Bohr at the end of the day, and now during the decades it developed in a more clear scientific question. At that time was scientific and philosophical in some sense, but now the scientific question became clear. And the issue is very simple. Quantum theory is a linear theory because the Schrödinger equation is linear, which means that you have a superposition principle, which means that if a state of a system is possible and another state of a system is possible, also the superposition of the two states is a possible state of the system, a new state. So if you can have a photon going in one way, and if you can create the same photon going in another way, then also the photon being in a superposition of going one way and the other way is a possibility. And that's what people see in experiment every day. So this is not a problem, this is what we know. The problem comes that, according to the theory, there is no breakdown of linearity. So this superposition principle should hold for photons, atoms, molecules, large molecules, and it does because it has been experimentally verified, but it should hold also for larger cluster of molecules, for viruses, for bacteria, for nanospheres, for tables, chairs, and cats, as Schrödinger first put it. So it should be possible, in principle, to create superposition of macroscopic objects. But we never see such a thing, and that's the problem. The theory, from a theoretical point of view, easily predicts such a thing. But then, these superpositions are not part of our daily experience. That's the question. And then, of course, there is a lot of variety of answers to that question. So you have Bohm's theory, which is historically the oldest way to answer this question. There is a many worlds interpretation. There is the coherent histories approach, many minds. What else? Now there is a quantum informational approach to that, and collapse models are one of such alternatives. And the idea of collapse models is just to break linearity. So all other approaches I mentioned before keep the superposition principle, and then they try to interpret the wave function in an appropriate way by introducing new quantities, like in Bohm's theory, the position of particles, or by just keeping the wave function and give it a different role with respect to standard quantum theory. In collapse models, instead, you still keep the wave function, but you change the dynamics in such a way that for most small system, everything is more or less linear, no problem. But then there is a kind of amplification mechanism. The bigger the system becomes, the more the stronger these modifications become. And they become so strong to the point that when you talk about table and chairs, and also before that, of course, you cannot have superpositions. So the answer of collapse modulus is that we do not see superpositions because there cannot be superposition, because the correct dynamics does not allow for superpositions at the macroscopic scale. Macroscopic. There can be at the microscopic, but not at the macroscopic. There is a kind of a transition when you move from the micro to the macro domain.
So when you say that there's this kind of modification, where does this come from? Is there something physical that's causing this difference? Or is it just something that, you know, you want to have this effect, so you just kind of put it into the maths?
So at the stage where research is now, these are just phenomenological models. So you put these modifications just because you want them to be like that, because that's what you would do with phenomenological models. But of course, this is just the first step of the research. The idea is that there is an underlying theory, which is not quantum theory. It's a completely different framework, out of which quantum theory emerges in a kind of thermodynamical level, like classical thermodynamics emerges from classical statistical mechanics, just to give an idea. So quantum theory is a phenomenological theory that comes from this underlying theory, and also the collapse described in the way that collapse models do emerge as well from this underlying theory. So this is the general idea. Steve Adler from the Institute for Advanced Studies in Princeton proposed such a framework. It's a framework, it's not a fully developed theory because it's a very difficult job. He showed that this is at least viable. It could be false, but it's a viable option. Well, Penrose in some sense is suggesting that when he suggests that general relativity, that gravity breaks the superposition, implicitly, or at least as far as I understand, it implicitly assumes that there is a theory which is not quantum theory, the real theory of nature. And quantum theory comes out in a kind of coarse-grained level. So this is the role of collapse models. Phenomenological models where you do things because you want them to behave that way, but this is just the beginning of a research which should eventually bring to a different description of nature in terms of a different theory. Different, I mean, different from the standard quantum framework.
So, you know, you've talked about this problem that's arising because, you know, we don't see cats in two places at the same time. We don't experience ourselves as being in two places at the same time. But at this meeting, you know, we've had some lovely talks by experimentalists who've been talking about kind of trying to work out where that boundary is and looking for quantum effects in bigger and bigger particles and talking about looking at biological molecules and things like that. You know, so how do you decide when you're putting together some kind of collapse model where you're going to say that limit lies? Do you just choose a number and say, well, this will be the size cutoff or the mass cutoff, and after this we shouldn't expect to see any quantum effects, and then, you know, wait to see what the experimentalists tell you?
Yeah, that is a problem or a weakness, if you wish, of collapse models. Again, being phenomenological models, you do not have really a strong argument as where to put the cutoff. You can give some criteria, reasonableness criteria. So, for example, Adler suggested that during the process of, for example, of latent image formation, when you send a photon to in an old-fashioned type of photography, a bunch of photons to a film, and then you have this latent image, then you should have the collapse there. And then if the collapse has to be affected at that level, then you have to have a specific strength for the collapse mechanism. But it's just nothing more than that, just a suggestion, a feeling that the collapse should occur at that time. If you do not have an underlying solid theory, you cannot do anything better than that. So at the stage, as things are right now, it's just everything in the hands of experimentalists to go more and more towards the macroscopic scale and see whether there is this transition or not. From a theoretical point of view, you really cannot have any stronger argument than just a feeling or an idea of a possibility for a threshold.
So one thing I'll say about this meeting, or not even actually just the meeting itself, but the coffee breaks and sort of the lunchtime discussions and the dinner discussions, they've been incredibly heated. People have been very, very passionate about their own personal views, their own interpretations of quantum theory or something underlying quantum theory, you know, and they're not afraid to argue about this very, very passionately. Is there a particular model? I mean, are you particularly drawn to collapse models for some reason? Or do you think that, you know, you look at everything with a kind of equally fair eye and, you know, you're drawn to one or the other? Yeah, how does it work when you're a quantum physicist and you're, you know, this is your day job, how do you decide what to spend your time on?
I am very much passionate about the questions, much less about the answers. So I like those questions that really go down to the foundations of a physical theory. And regarding the answers, no, I am very much less passionate. So I work on collapse models, but I'm not the kind of person that would defend them as this is the right way to go. But the reason why I like them is that they really try to break quantum theory, so to say. So if you take the collapse model's point of view, then you are implicitly assuming that quantum theory at some deeper level is wrong and something else has to be done, which is different from the other situation. So in the many worlds theory, for example, interpretation, for example, you accept completely quantum theory, you just want to look at the wave function in the correct way. In Bohm's theory, it's also, in a sense, a closed program in a positive way. So you have particles, and you make them move, and you have to be sure to make them move in a correct way within a quantum framework. And it works beautifully. But collapse model says, look, we are not understanding anything in some sense. Of course, we do understand a lot. But at a very deep level, we are not understanding anything. We have to rethink quantum theory. And it is precisely my approach towards quantum theory. Quantum theory, is a phenomenological theory that explains the outcome of measurements in an excellent way, which is an obvious statement because it does, but it's nothing more than that, a theory that explains the outcome of measurements. It's not a theory that aims of going down in real understanding nature at the deepest level, and that's what we should do. I don't know how to do that. Collapse models seems to me just the most promising direction for research. But of course, I could be entirely wrong.
And now we're also going to spend a day celebrating a certain very renowned physicist. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about him and, you know, what he's famous for and what we're sort of, you know, why we're celebrating him?
Yeah, we will celebrate the 80th birthday of Giancarlo Girardi. He's, I think, one of the few people that really stands out in the foundational community. There are many of them, and well, of course, this is a subjective statement. I think this is one of the few, and not least because I was one of his students. So I have to say that I am very partisan about that. And well, he was together with other collaborators. He was one of the inventors of collapse models, which I think was one of the big novelties in the field after Bohm's theory, after Bell inequalities. I think it was the third important thing that came out in the mid-80s. So the idea that you can really touch the Schrödinger equation, you can really modify it without doing any serious damage. Before that, it was not clear whether you could really do that. So when you have a fundamental equation, like Newton equations, Maxwell equations, you would be very careful in really modifying them, because one day some colleague of yours could come and tell you, look, if you do this, then you will really run into trouble. This experiment disproves this. So forget about that. And the courage and the luck, if you wish, that's also important in life, of Girardi, but intuition mainly, was to show that actually you can modify the Schrödinger equation and you don't destroy things so much. And that proves that quantum theory is actually more flexible than you think. It's not a dogma that you have to take. You can play around and still things behave as you see them in experiments, and perhaps you can play even more and get to a new theory. And so that's why we are celebrating him, because he was the first one that morally gave a big kick to quantum theory, together with many other things. But this is what he's most famous for.
Later in the meeting, I grabbed the chance to speak with Giancarlo Girardi himself, before we got thrown out of the lecture theatre, that is. Right, now I'm here with the man of the day, the man of the week, the man of the hour, who is being celebrated this week, because this year, I should say not today, but later this year, you're going to be turning 80. Congratulations, you know, happy birthday in advance. But this meeting is sort of celebrating some of the work that you've done in quantum foundations. A lot of people have been saying that you've had this, you know, incredible influence on the way that quantum foundations has developed over the years. In particular, we've been talking about collapse models, because you're the G in the GRW collapse model. But well, first of all, how did you become interested in quantum foundations? Because a lot of people here have been talking about how, well, you know, a few decades ago, it was almost sort of career suicide to be thinking about quantum foundations. This isn't something that, you know, was a good thing for a young physicist to be doing.
Well, as I told in my during my talk, the first interest came from the fact that I was graduated in a place in which this problem were debated. They were debated in a way which was not the correct one. It did not lead to a solution. And in fact, I followed the subsequent debate which took place between these people from Milan and Professor Rosenfeld and Professor Wigner. Rosenfeld was on the side of the people from Milan and Wigner was against. And so I followed and I realized that the proposed work by the people from Milan, which was very interesting, it did not solve the problem, the basic problem of quantum mechanics, which is this possibility of having state of a system in which you have macroscopically different properties, the paradigmatic case being the Schrödinger cat, but you can have a chair being in a superposition of being here and there, which is logically incompatible with the statement this chair is either here or there. Quantum mechanics is built in such a way that the only question you can answer is, tell me the probability that I will find the chair here if I make a measurement of the position of the chair. And this is, in my opinion, not satisfactory.
Okay, so lots of people have been, you know, vexed by this kind of measurement problem and, you know, the idea that the macroscopic world has different properties to the microscopic world, but they don't all go about coming up with ways to kind of deal with the problem. So how did you, you know, first get the idea, the kind of spark to inspire you to think of some kind of solution?
Well, the crucial problem is that one could accept that the macroscopic world has different laws than the microscopic world. But the bad thing is that, for instance, with the radical difference with respect to relativity theory, in which you have a clear parameter, the velocity, the ratio between the velocity of a body and the velocity of light, marks the border between classical mechanics and special relativity. In quantum mechanics, you don't have anything which gives this borderline. Typically, there are undoubtedly macroscopic object like a superconductor, or if you want to describe even the properties of a solid like a crystal or something like that, you need quantum mechanics. So it's not macroscopicity who cancels out quantum mechanics. However, the superposition of principle of quantum mechanics, which for instance in describing the structure of a diamond does not give problem, it gives a problem from the fact that the theory itself allows this diamond to be here plus there, which means neither here nor there.
So, you know, people have been talking here about experiments where, you know, I guess in standard quantum mechanics, there's no reason to believe that you can't just, you know, if you get the right kind of experiment and everything is beautifully, pristinely done, you could continue to see quantum effects with larger and larger objects. And people here have been talking about doing these experiments with, you know, things with more and more atoms and just bigger particles. What does the collapse model say would happen?
Well, the problem is the following. Deep in my heart, I am convinced that the linear nature of quantum mechanics must break down at a certain level. If you want to trivialize this statement, we have definite perception and we don't end up in being in a superposition of having perceived a chair here plus a chair there. We have definite perception. So I have no doubt that at a certain point, the superposition principle, which is the very basis of all quantum theory, must be broken. So, as I said before, I am not attaching a great importance to what we did to the collapse model. It was a model that had two merits. First, to prove that it is possible to have a unique universal dynamic which governs everything and which reduces to quantum mechanics at the micro level and to classical mechanics at the macro level and gives outcome to the measurement processes. So this was the main motivation. The second aspect, which I consider interesting, and I am learning a lot of things here because I am not an experimentalist and I am sufficiently old not to follow every day all the literature which is coming out, is that the other, let us say, characteristic of collapse model is that they are actually a rival theory with respect to quantum mechanics. That is to say, they are in principle, a la Popper, falsifiable against quantum mechanics. The falsification probably will be very difficult. I don't know if it will never arrive, but in any case, I think it is interesting because they could give an indication where, coming back to my deep conviction, where the superposition principle starts to be broken.
You know, lots of people have said that, you know, it's amazing that you didn't just have an idea, but you obviously did a lot of mathematics to show that you could kind of modify Schrödinger's equation in a way that still works, but gives you the collapse model that you wanted. You know, without getting into too many technical details, I just wondered, how easy or difficult was that to do? Did you think when you set out doing it with your collaborators that you could do it? Oh, we're going to get thrown out.
Well, I think that modifying quantum mechanics was not an easy task because we have incredible bounds coming from all very well-known facts. Well, a typical example, our localization induces higher velocity to the particle, which induces a heating of the universe. So the first thing that you have to check is that you don't produce a heating of the universe, which is incompatible with what we know about the universe itself. And actually you can prove this was in our paper, because before writing our paper we tried to face the most basic problem which could emerge, and you can prove, for instance, that our model induces an increase of the temperature of the universe which is about 1/100 of the black body background radiation. So it is compatible with known fact.
And then one last question, because we have talked about the experiments, and you know, you're very proud that that your theory stands as a rival to quantum mechanics. It's something that can be falsified. How would you feel if they did come back with results that falsified your model?
Well, the game is either they falsify our model and they prove that quantum mechanics, in our model, for instance, Adler is playing with some of the parameters of our model, but there are some problems with this, because if you modify too much the parameter of our model, you have to introduce other things. For instance, he has to introduce a cutoff function of the frequencies, which is, a rather complicated thing. So really you go in a field in which you can have infinitely many theories. While if you say my theory won't, aims to make things objective, and what it tries to make objective are the position of the particle, you don't have many, many choices besides the collapse theories that we have worked out.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It's been a lovely day here. I'll say a happy birthday to you for the future again, because we're about to be thrown out of the building. So thank you
thanks
again.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you to Giancarlo Girardi and Angelo Bassi for chatting with me. We'll have more from the meeting in other podcasts. Collapse models are just one way of thinking about the issues surrounding quantum theory, and in the next edition, we'll hear more about Bohmian mechanics. On the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community, you'll also find more information about the COST meeting. I've been Zia Morali. Thank you for listening.